Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. John Steele here again in the host chair this week. And for all of the latest J2 news and reaction, I'm joined by a bit of a stranger recently. It's Stuart Smith. Stu, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Don. No, I have been a bit of a stranger. My apologies for that, but yeah. It's good to be back. Let's talk some J2.
Excellent. Yes, you're perma-busy at work these days, Stu. So
That's permanently busy, not busy doing my perm, right?
Yes. Well, look, I can't... Yeah, we can't talk about hairlines or hairstyles for long, so we'll move things on swiftly. But hope you've been keeping up with all the latest J2 action, Stu, and you can tell me what you've noticed from the most recent round in a moment. So... Last weekend was round 21 in the second tier, Stu. We made it to the halfway stage with in decent haste, really. We're not even midway through June and the season's already halfway through. What we're going to do in this section, part one, we're just going to kind of run the rule over three of the bigger games or three of the games that we thought looked appetizing from the round. So let's start off with Tokushima 2, Sendai 2. Sendai in second place in the table, but wobbling just a little bit at the moment. One win in their last four. I think we can really pick up the story of this game from quite late on in the 69th minute, because that's when Tokushima went in front with Kazunari Ichimi touching in a right wing cross from Koki Sugimori. He looked suspiciously offside when scoring this goal, but there was no conclusive replay on the DAZN highlights, so we'll have to draw our own conclusions. But as we know, Stu, Tokushima love a draw. This was their 13th in 21 games this season, and Sendai were of course level. Just 2 minutes later, their Brazilian centre-back Kaká got his clearance all wrong inside the penalty area. I'm not sure how he managed to do this. I watched it a couple of times, but he managed to sort of clear the ball backwards towards his own penalty spot, and the former Tokushima man Yuto Uchida was on hand to sweep the ball in from about 10 yards. So 1-1, but then Tokushima went back in front with about 10 minutes left. After being the unwitting villain for Sendai's equaliser, Kaká was suddenly the unwitting hero as a speculative effort from Shunto Kodama bounced off him and completely wrong-footed the Sendai goalkeeper Stojicic to make it 2-1. As mentioned already though, Stu, Tokushima love a draw, and they went as far as conceding a 96th minute penalty with their late sub Taiki Tamukai just about pulling Takumi Mase's shirt inside the penalty area as they were underneath that high ball. So a penalty was given. Yusuke Minagawa took it, and it was saved by Tokushima's always impressive goalkeeper Suarez, but the rebound came back to Minagawa, and he was able to score to make it 2-2, and then the final whistle was blown before Tokushima could even restart the game from the kickoff. So Tokushima 2, Sendai 2 was the full-time score. Pretty breathless last 20 minutes, it has to be said. I know you just saw the highlights of this game, Stu, but anything you picked out or anything on Sendai or Tokushima in general?
They love a draw. It was the first thing on my notes that I had to go and check. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like you said, 13 out of 21. I think they've drawn the last four, right? Something along those lines. Mm. I don't know. They've drawn with Sendai this week, and then I think the previous week they drew with Niigata, I think I remember. So they can mix it with the top sides, so, and they're not far away from being a very good side, I think. They just, whatever it is that teams lack when they can't turn draws into wins, Tokushima have it in spades, and they need to kind of figure it out, because looking at the table, they're in the bottom half, I think. And that's not where they should be with all that talent. It was interesting that Ichimi scored. Sorry, I forgot his name for a minute. Ichimi scored because he was once one of the rising stars in the J League, and not too long ago. I think it was back in 2019, I want to say, when he was doing it with Kyoto, when he was on loan from Gamba. But his career has just seemed to have stalled, and like it was odd to see him scoring, because he's been out of the limelight for so long. Sendai themselves, I think they have a pretty decent strength in depth for G2. I think at the start of the year, I wasn't that impressed with their kind of squad lineup. But when you look at kind of the players that they could bring on, so they obviously brought on Minagawa, they brought on Keimon Togashi, they brought on Fuginio. Like, those are good players to bring on for J2 sides. And, you know, these kind of points, especially with it being so tight at the top, that 1 point could come in extremely handy come the end of the season. And I think obviously it's a 2-2 draw, so you can say there's nothing between the two sides. I think in general, the way that the season's going, I don't think there's a lot between them. But obviously Tokushima need to kind of stop messing around with draws, and they need to kind of hold on to some more leads, and they need to don't know what it is. Is it mental strength? Is it kind of it's odd. It's just really, really weird. I don't understand why they've hit so many draws, but the talent level is better than their record suggests. Mm. But they need to produce it on the field, and that's where they're lacking the conviction to turn draws into wins.
Mm. Well, I think Tokushima, like, I just had a quick look. I think they've only lost four times, right, in the first half of the season. Now, that's fewer than Sendai. I think Sendai have lost five, you know, in their second. So, yeah, I think I take your point. I think with Tokushima, it's kind of a bit, maybe seems like a bit of a funny thing to say, but halfway through the season, I'm still not really sure how good they are. I think you're right to highlight Ichimi, because I think up front in the real kind of in the front line is where they haven't quite found their sort of main man, have they? Because Mushaga Bakenga has been in and out of the team and sometimes looks really good and sometimes doesn't really convince. And I think we can say the same about Ichimi. I mean, he had a spell at Yokohama FC, you know, and was very anonymous there. So I think his career trajectory has been a bit of a bit like Koki Ogawa, right? Sort of 2 or 3 years ago being the sort of potential star, and then it all kind of going a bit flat. So if Ichimi can be that kind of target man, then that's good news for them. Masaki Watai, you know, I really like that sort of tricky dribbler just behind at the front. He's not really done it consistently this year. I know they've got El Sino has come in, hasn't he? Yep. The guy used to play for Kawasaki and maybe one or two other J-League teams that I've forgotten. I think he adds a bit of a class as well. But I think for Tokushima, yeah, they're definitely at the point where they need to kind of, if they don't get it together soon, I mean, I think you're right to say they're not too far behind right now, but if they don't get it together soon, I think it could be, you know, a wasted season almost if they don't start winning more matches. But yeah, it's interesting, which way will it go? Will they just carry on drawing sort of constantly, or will they start winning more, or could it go the other way and then they're losing games? And Sendai, I think as well, this is a tricky game. I mean, they could have lost this match. Obviously, they got a really late equaliser, which I think was a penalty, even though Tokushima the players were pretty furious with the decision. But I think that was frustration more than anything else. I think it was a shirt pull, so it's a penalty. But I think as well, Sendai are kind of in that sort of top three that are pulling away or have pulled away a little bit, haven't they? You know, Niigata, Sendai, and Yokohama FC. But again, they don't look unbeatable or untouchable. But I saw they had Masato Nakayama back up front, didn't they? He was back for injury to start this game. So again, they have perhaps the sort of focal point up front that Tokushima don't. And I think that will probably mean that they're getting more goals and more wins. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, halfway through the season and you've got the team in sort of, what Tokushima, 14th, 15th? Against the team in second, and there wasn't much to choose between them on the day. I think that bodes well for an exciting second half of the season, to be honest. So, yes. Okay, should we keep it moving, Stu? There was a game that you very professionally watched in full to prepare for the pod, so we'll move on to that one. Yamaguchi 0, Okayama 1. Okayama up into fourth place. They are the sort of principal chaser now, 8 points behind that top three. But we should mention, as I always do, they have that game in hand, you know, as well. But there was no Mitch Duke, but no problem for Okuama in this game. It was Thiago Alves who stepped up here. He took on the sort of lone striker role in their formation, and he scored the winner from close range in the 37th minute here. He sort of tucked the ball away after some good work getting things into the box from Yudai Tanaka. Just before that, though, Yamaguchi had threatened. Wataru Tanaka, no relation, had hit the post at the other end after some nice play from a player who I've really liked in the last couple of games, Takaya Numata, up front for Yamaguchi. In the second half, Okayama showed what they are really good at, defending. And in the space of about 10 seconds, they made a pair of headed goal line clearances, didn't they? First it was Tomohiko Miyazaki, and then Jordi Boyce, who headed the ball off the line to safety. So that was impressive stuff. And I think that was enough to earn them the win. It finished Yamaguchi 0, Okayama 1. Okayama going quite nicely at the moment under Takashi Kiyama. They're 5 games unbeaten and in 4th place, as I mentioned. Stu, you watched the game in full. What do you think? And are you a believer in Okayama now? Because you weren't sure at the start of the season, and neither was I. But what are we thinking about Okayama after 21 rounds?
I'm interested in them. And I like what Kiyama's done. And I'll go through, because I watched them a couple of times this year in full. The system that they play, obviously, you were right in saying that they were without Mitchell Duke, because he's on World Cup duty with Australia. And so, yeah, they play Thiago Alves up front. But what they do really well is they spread the play. So they got Yudai Tanaka, who plays wide out on the right. And in this game, the Korean Han Wigwon, I think I pronounced that right, he was stationed way out on the left. What that does, that stretches teams. And it especially stretches teams that play 4 at the back. And it was noticeable that whenever Okayama had possession, you had those two, Han Yu-Guan and Tanaka, they just kind of automatically hit sidelines. And the reason that works so well, I think, from what I've seen of Okayama this year, is that they've got Stefan Mogg, who is a great passer, but they've also got Jordi Boyce, who can ping passes from the back as well. And so whether those passes go out to the wing to those two players I just mentioned earlier, or whether they go through the channels for Thiago Alves, Thiago Alves brings something a little bit different to the top line than Mitchell Duke. Mitchell Duke is far more of a physical presence, like your traditional target man. Thiago Alves, just the kind of player he is, he runs the channels and he's a little bit more mobile, but I was really impressed with Okayama, actually. You mentioned in your match put there that they do well defending. Of course, having Yasutake, Yanagi and Boyce in the centre of your defence is a really good thing. But one player that I've liked this year is Haruka Motoyama. He just sits in front of the back 4, and he doesn't look like a first-year pro. I mean, he came straight out of the Kansai, which is the Osaka Kobe kind of university league, and that league is a very, very high standard. I've watched teams from that league knock out J League teams on a regular basis in the Emperor's Cup. They brought him in, and he's played most of their games actually. Whenever I've seen Okayama, he's just there in front of the back 4, getting the ball, offering them protection, doing the simple stuff with it, but he looks really good. Tanaka on the right looks really good as well. And I think that they look strong, but they also have strength in depth as well, because obviously Duke is out. Thiago Alves actually came off in this game. It was difficult to tell whether it was cramp. I think the commentators kept saying it was like 34 degrees, 35 degrees pitch side on Sunday in Yamaguchi. I know in Gifu it was sweltering, so it stands to reason that Yamaguchi was as well. Or if it was cramped, that's good. If it's a genuine muscle injury, that's going to be a bit of an issue, because I'm not sure when Mitch Duke will come back. But I think Takashi Kiyama is trying to marry the experience and the kind of battle-hardened likes of Boyce, the likes of Yanagi, with these kind of new, kind of young players like Tanaka, like Motoyama. And when you've got kind of the foreign players that come in and add something a bit different, Duke, Mog, Han, like they're good. And they should be around at the top end of the table come the end of the year. We said this kind of almost 10 years in a row with Okayama. There's no reason that they shouldn't be up there. But this feels and looks something a bit different. They have a little bit more, I'm hesitant to say star quality, but they have good depth for a J2 side, and I think that that'll stand them in good stead. I think for Renov, I think it's one win, one draw, 5 defeats from their last 7. I think the opposite of Okayama, they don't have the depth to deal with a challenging schedule. I think Shuhei Otsuki played on Sunday, but he's been out with a hamstring injury for quite a while, actually, since the middle of April. They can't really afford, even though he's not the most prolific, they can't really afford to lose many attacking options. Like you said in your match part again, the kid Numata, he also came from the Kansai League, I think. He's a first year pro. He looks really good. They've obviously got Daisuke Takagi in his weird looking mouthpiece. You seen that? It's kind of half black, half white, so you're never quite sure if he's.
He's like a rapper with gold teeth.
Yeah, but it looks like he's had his teeth knocked out or something. But so they can create chances. And one player I do really, really like for Renov Yamaguchi is their fullback, Kento Hashimoto. Seen him a few times this year. He's a really, really good kind of attacking fullback. It's like Kawano for Okayama, the fullback. Both fullbacks were really good. He gets forward and he puts balls into the box. And like, I think it's just a case of profligacy. And they just ran off and just lack like someone to put the ball in the back of the net. And that sounds like a huge problem. And I'm sure it is. Mm. But that's what they need. Mm. They have plenty of decent kind of creative players. Not world beaters, but decent. But Okayama were just too strong, too streetwise for them. And I think Okayama look good. I think Renov, if they're not careful, they may get, if teams below them get an upturn in form with new managers or whatnot, then they might see themselves dragged into a little bit of trouble. But good win for Okayama. And yeah, I'm not a believer, but I'm willing to buy into them because I think I can see what they're trying to do. And I think that they will be insulated to a certain extent from suspensions and injuries just because they're blooding like some good young players as well as having the experience around them.
Mm-hmm. Lots of good words popping up there. I've got profligacy, streetwise, good listening from my point of view, Stu. Excellent analysis. Yeah, I think with Okayama, yeah, that strength in depth is a good point because I think they have had a couple of setbacks this season that I think would have knocked maybe other teams, like losing Togo Umeda, the goalkeeper, who again he's not a big name. I don't think, obviously, but he's a really, really good goalkeeper. I think he had pretty much probably one of the saves of the season last year, that close range header. I can't remember who he's against now, but it was like last minute wonder save. But he obviously like completely ruptured his, I think, ACL or cruciate ligaments and had to go back to his parent club, Shimizu. But that hasn't really broken their stride at all. I think they've had two different keepers since then, haven't they? They've rotated the other two goalkeepers, but it hasn't felt like a step down in quality. And the same with Mitch Duke, obviously. I think, obviously, before the season started, they knew they would miss him for a game or two here and there with Australia, but it hasn't, you know, they've still gone away to Yamaguchi and got the win without him. And I think you mentioned star quality. I think what Okayama have done, this might be unintentional because it might just be a factor in, you know, where Okayama is and what kind of players they can draw, but they have a really, really good... what do you call it when it's like a second tier like galaxy or like, you know, a second tier constellation? Because they have all these pretty good players like Thiago Alves, Mitch Duke, Stefan Mork, but they're not really players. They're not like box office players that teams might want to steal, I don't think. And I think they've done a really good job of like assembling a squad of like underrated or like under unheralded. The radar, yeah, unheralded players that I think could take them to the, you know, could take them into the playoffs, and they certainly seem to be heading that way in the moment, at the moment. So yeah, fair play to them. Yamaguchi, I think they're probably about par for the course, aren't they? They had that really good start, and it seemed like maybe they would turn in a corner, but again, they are just lacking, I think, like you said, strength in depth, and you know, the players at the most difficult to get, cost the most money, reliable goal scorers up front, right? That's an issue. And yeah, Daisuke Takagi, I think the mouthpiece and also the hair are kind of a weird combination. Looks more like a sort of I don't know if it's, he's too young to be having a midlife crisis, but I definitely think yeah, that one of the hairstyle and the mouth guard needs a rethink, perhaps. I don't know, but yeah, we'll perhaps leave it there, Stu, before we get any more off topic. But yeah, good win for Okayama, I think. And like you said, challenging circumstances. It was hot. They're missing a player or two, so that is a sign of a good team if they can get the job done in those circumstances, I think. Okay, one more game for us to talk about from round 21. I think, Stu, in this kind of pick of the week section, Machida 1, Kumamoto 1, a draw that leaves Machida 7th and Kumamoto 9th. They both have 30 points in the standings. I think four teams are on 30 points, Machida and Kumamoto in that group. Machida only one win in their last four matches now, and Kumamoto 6 games unbeaten, which is good, but four draws in that sequence, and I think they've drawn the last three in a row. In this game, a stunning goal from Arya Jasuru Hasegawa gave Machida the lead. A really, really nice kind of one-touch move, which was started off by Takuya Yasui, ended with Dudu laying the ball off to Hasegawa, and he just curled a beautiful 20-yarder beyond Yuya Sato and into the top corner. So that was 1-0 to Machida in the 36th minute. And the home side were in front until 6 minutes from the end, and it was another cracking goal that brought Kumamoto an equaliser. Their rookie forward Yusei Toshida won't forget his first J-League goal. It was a brilliant strike. He controlled a kind of chipped ball from So Kawahara on his chest on the corner of the 6-yard box, and then he sent a dipping volley back across the goal and into the side netting on the opposite side for 1-1. When I say it was a Van Basten-like, I'm not saying it was Van Basten quality, but that's definitely the goal that came to my mind when I saw this on the highlights. So yeah, Kumamoto earned a point. Machida 1, Kumamoto 1 at full time. Stu, what do you think about this game? And Machida, are they on course? You know, they're on the verge of the playoffs, or are they underperforming a little bit? And how about Kumamoto? They just seem to be they've settled back into J2 life with no problem at all.
I wonder if Ranko Popovic actually knows his best attacking lineup, because I don't think Dudu is part of it, to be quite frank. I think on the bench he had Vinicius Araujo, I think you had Chon Tese, Kazumi Yamaguchi as well. I think that it just, maybe Popovic thought that this was Kumamoto at home, they should be able to roll them if he rotated or rested a few players. Because the rest of the lineup looks pretty good. I know they played William Popp in goal. Obviously he wasn't at fault for the goal, but there may be some rotation in there. I don't know if I don't know if Fukui was injured, but I think he was on the bench. I seem to remember in the starting lineup.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're a slightly more kind of advanced version of Tokushima, in that I think the sum of their parts should be able to produce a better record than that they've got at the moment. I think it's just a case of kind of maybe too much tinkering, or maybe, yeah, I don't know. For the obviously people who watch Machida more than I do will have a better opinion and a better sense of what's going on, but I think that I don't believe that Dudu and Hasegawa, even though his goal was really good, I don't believe that those two are the players that you bank on to get you the goals to get you into the playoffs, is my initial opinion at that. I think Kumamoto, the impressive thing about Kumamoto is that Oki Takeshi, the coach, he doesn't change. Like, he has a way of setting up, and he's found a really good way, well, apparently a really good way with Kumamoto. He just plays three defenders. He plays a mobile set of midfielders who can almost switch positions at the drop of a hat. And he plays a wide forward system as well, which tries to take advantage of getting to the sidelines. And I think that something that... but I'm pretty sure they've got a negative goal difference, which is quite surprising for Olki, because he banks his kind of...
Well, they do have Yuya Sato in goal, though.
They do, but they should be able to negate that by the focus on attacking football that Olki has. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at the table now. They've scored 8 more goals than Jeff, but they've conceded 12 more than Jeff, and they're on the same number of points. They've scored more than Nagasaki. They've scored more than Okayama, but they just ship goals kind of for the fun of it, really. And it's going to be interesting. Like, I think they're a good side. I do think they're in a bit of a false position right now, because I think there are teams that are better than them. It wouldn't surprise me to see them slip down the table towards 15th, 16th. But I think that would be a decent result for them. You know, they were only promoted on the last day of last year. They were probably one of the favourites to go back down with Iwate. They're putting up a much better fight than Iwate are right now. So it's good for them. So even though Machida and Kumamoto are on the same points, I think they are two teams that have much, much different kind of expectations from this season, which is why I think Machida will feel disappointed to be on 30 points, whereas Kumamoto... I mean, if you ask Takeshi Oki, he'll say he's disappointed, because he targets, like... he targets 3 wins and a draw from every 5 games he plays or something like that. So he'll say he's disappointed, but I think they're doing really well right now. And that's how I see Machida and Kumamoto.
Yeah, I think the funny thing about Kumamoto is every time I look at the league table, I kind of make a mental note we should talk about them on the pod more, but they just kind of, they've done an Akita. They've just kind of sneaked in to like sort of upper mid table. And you just sort of your eyes kind of skim over them in the table, because it's like they're always there, you know, in and around that kind of top 10, you know, top half. So I think that is an achievement of it in and of itself, I suppose, for a newly promoted team. So fair play to them. I think Takeshi Oki must have the copyright on the sort of 3-1-3-3, because I've never seen the zone graphic is only that graphic is only used for his team. So I'm not sure what's going on there. It's funny, isn't it? If it's so effective and so successful, why do I not see that more often? But perhaps it's
he's a visionary.
Yeah. He's a trendsetter. But I thought they did well in this game, and I think they've had a couple of really impressive ones. Like Yuhi Takemoto, I've liked this year, and Toshiki Takahashi, I think, is sort of reminds me a bit of Kaito Taniguchi, and sort of like stepping up a level. How's he going to do? And he's done absolutely fine. I think he's been really good. So I don't have any. I think you're right that they'll slip down the table as the season goes on, probably, but not to any dangerous degree. I think they've shown that they've got enough to be fine. And Machida, it's funny, because there's so much attacking talent, attacking prowess, but they're often, you know, they're scoring like one goal a game a lot of the time. And if you're going to be doing that, you probably need better, not to blow my own trumpet, I might have the wrong read on this, but we talked in pre-season about how they're a bit short at centre-back, you know, for example, in defence. Like if you're going to be trying to grind out sort of one, you know, winning by one goal, you need a rock solid defence, don't you? Watertight defense. I don't think they have that, I think you're right, and they do have. There's definitely a formula with that kind of the attacking sort of options they have there to be a bit more, you know, to be on the front foot a lot more and to be scoring more goals. But we'll wait and see. Like you said, they're definitely there or thereabouts, and wouldn't be a surprise at all to see them in the playoffs. But I don't think. I think considering the sort of forward options they have, perhaps they, like you said, they might be disappointed. They might have been aiming a bit higher for this year. But top six looks eminently doable, doesn't it? Even if they're not sort of setting the world on fire at the moment. Yeah, I thought the ending of this game was sort of funny. Yuya Sato collided with the goalpost, didn't he?
He did.
And he wasn't able to. He didn't make it back to the centre circle for like the sort of customary bow at the end. But I think he was fine. I don't think he was injured. Yeah, it was just that there was such an audible clang on the sort of the on-pitch microphone when he collided with the post. So not sure who came off worst, really.
I hope the post is okay. Yeah,
he's but he's another sort of barrel-chested barrel-chested guys.
He's a unit.
Yeah, I think if he bumped into you, you would know about it, I think. Yeah, so, all right. Stu, great stuff. Thanks for all the insights. We'll take a quick comfort break now. When we come back, we have an absolute sort of a raft of coaching changes to go through, as well as a sort of preview of the midweek game, singular, and the weekend games coming up. So, yeah, we'll be back in a moment. Hello everyone, John Steele here again. I think I forgot to mention at the end of part one, but here's the usual roundup of all of the other games from J2 round 21. Firstly, Albirex Niigata stay top, 2 points clear of the rest after winning 2-1 away at Oita. Niigata took the lead midway through the first half when Koji Suzuki sent Yoshiaki Takagi racing clear with a through ball on the halfway line. Takagi, who was played onside just about by Oita's Katsunori Uebisu, finished confidently. There was disaster for Oita right at the start of the second half when Niigata scored again. Takagi connected with a cross from Eitaro Matsuda, and Takagi's shot deflected off the hapless Uebisu, looped over Oita's goalkeeper Shun Takagi, no relation of course, and went in off the post for 2-0 to the visitors. With about 17 minutes to go, Shun Nagasawa headed Oita back into the game, scoring from a Rei Matsumoto cross, but it finished in the end, Oita 1, Niigata 2. Oita did have 2 goals disallowed in the closing stages though, and the first of which was scored by Arata Watanabe, didn't look particularly offside to me. So I think perhaps Oita a bit unlucky not to get anything, but it finished Oita 1, Niigata 2. Yokohama FC are third, level on points with second place Sendai. Yokohama drew 1-1 at Kanazawa in round 21. Fantastic attendance for this game, 11,859 in the crowd, but they saw Yokohama go in front in the 11th minute. Koki Ogawa heading in across from Zain Isaka for his 12th goal of the season. Takumi Nakamura had a great chance to put Yokohama further ahead early on in the second half, but Kanazawa's goalie Yuto Shirai made a good block. And Kanazawa got their equaliser about 15 minutes from full time when a free kick was flicked on at the near post by Yohei Toyoda. The ball eventually dropped perfectly for centre-back Honeya Shoji to poke it over the line for 1-1. And Kanazawa nearly won it at the end with Shion Niwa heading over. He should really have scored or at least got the ball on target. But it finished Kanazawa 1, Yokohama FC 1. A second straight draw for Yokohama in third. And Kanazawa doing pretty okay for themselves. They're in 12th at the moment. Moving on to the other playoff places, Nagasaki won 2-1 at bottom side FC Ryukyu, but lost their manager after the game. More on that in a moment. Shunya Yoneda scored Nagasaki's winner in second half stoppage time with a flying header from Kota Muramatsu's cross. Lots of chances in this game. Quite surprising that it was only 1-1 going into second half stoppage time. Earlier on, Ryukyu goalkeeper Junto Taguchi had to make a good save from Edgar Junior after he'd passed the ball straight to the Nagasaki attacker. And Taguchi had to block Junior again and claw away a pile driver from Yoneda. All of this in the first 15 minutes as Nagasaki pressed. At the other end, Lee Yong-jik almost put Ryukyu in front, but planted his header wide when he should have done better. Nagasaki eventually went ahead just after the half hour. Koya Okada firing the ball into the roof of the net from close range after a corner kick had been headed down into the 6-yard box. At the start of the second half, Edgar Junior should have put Nagasaki further ahead, but he was foiled again by Taguchi when he went clean through. And then Ryukyu levelled with a very smart free kick routine just before the hour. Everybody was expecting a shot, but Kazumasa Uesato rolled the ball to the unmarked Ryunosuke Noda to sweep the ball in for about 6 yards for 1-1. Great idea for a goal, but perhaps not the best defending from Nagasaki, but really, really inventive at free kick. And that looked like it was going to be enough to earn a point for Ryukyu until Yoneda broke their hearts late on with that winner. So final score, Ryukyu 1, Nagasaki 2. After the game, Nagasaki announced that Brazilian coach Fabio Carille will take over running the team from Hiroshi Matsuda. So Matsuda is out and Fabio Carille is in. We'll talk more about that with Stu later. And Ryukyu, who were looking for a new manager, confirmed the appointment of a new Spanish coach, Nacho Fernandez, after this game. And again, I had a quick chat with Stuart about that, which is coming up later. So yeah, new coaches are aplenty at the moment. But Ryukyu 1, Nagasaki 2, the final score there. Yamagata suffered a mildly surprising 1-0 defeat away at Mito in round 21, with Kaito Umeda scoring his first goal for Mito in the 80th minute. Mito started off like an absolute freight train in this game, creating chance after chance in the opening exchanges, and Yamagata goalkeeper Masaaki Goto had to be in fine form as usual. And the game seemed to be heading for a 0-0 draw until a horrible mistake from Yamagata centre-back Hiroki Noda. He slipped when he was in possession on the edge of his own penalty area, and that presented the ball to Umeda, who gleefully dispatched it past Goto from close range. So it finished Mito 1, Yamagata 0. Two straight wins for Mito, up to 11th place. And this was quite a subdued Yamagata display by their standards, although I think we have to give Mito some credit. They did really well to keep Yamagata's chances to a minimum. Switching gears to the bottom of the table, there was a huge win for struggling Omiya. They won 1-0 away at Akita, with the almost forgotten Jin Izumisawa getting the winner here, 9 minutes from full time. A first league win for Omiya of their Naoki Soma era. Omiya were on the back foot straight away though, and Akita nearly took the lead in just the second minute. Hayate Take went clean through and actually went around Omiya's goalkeeper Ko Shimura, but much maligned, at least by me, centre-back Keisuke Nishimura was able to get back and clear off the line. And the Squirrels needed another goal line clearance midway through the half. Shinya Yajima was in the right place to volley clear as Akita threatened again. And this game looked to be heading for a 0-0 draw as well, or more likely, it felt like it was going to be a 1-0 Akita win, until Izumisawa popped up. Akita just couldn't clear their lines, following across from the left. The ball ran loose to Izumisawa at a tight angle inside the penalty area, and from close to the byline, he somehow managed to squeeze the ball under Akita's goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka and into the net via a defender. So a first goal of the season for Izumisawa, and a potentially vital win for Omiya. Akita 0, Omiya 1 at full time. Omiya still 20th, but they've only lost one of their last four games. Perhaps we can say that's evidence of a Naoki Soma new manager bounce. Akita, as usual, looking fairly comfortable at the moment. They're in 15th. In other matches, Kofu and Jeff Chiba drew 1-1 at the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium on Saturday evening. Very entertaining game this, in quite wet conditions. Jeff went in front midway through the first half through Keita Buanika. He scored from close range after the ball just kept bouncing again and again inside the Kofu penalty area. Somehow nobody could get ahead on it and clear. We should give credit to Buanika and his strike partner for this game, Thiago de Leonso, for keeping the chance alive. This was the third goal of what's becoming a breakout season for Buanika, and good news for him as well this week. He's played enough minutes of first team football to earn his professional A contract at Chiba, so a very good week for him all round. Jeff nearly got a second goal from a corner a few minutes later, but they were denied by a fantastic triple save from Kofu's goalkeeper Kohei Kawata, well worth checking out in the highlights reel online. The visitors were then left to rue those chances in the 62nd minute when Kofu equalised. William Lira headed a corner kick down into the 6-yard box, and there Hidehiro Sugai, Kofu defender, was completely alone to sweep the ball over the line for 1-1. He looked like he might have been offside, and a lot of Jeff players were claiming that, but the goal was given. And that's how it finished. At full time, it was Kofu 1, Jeff Chiba 1. Both teams traded chances late on, though. Thiago de Leonso should have put Jeff back in front after Tomoyomiki set him up, but he missed a sitter, and he really should have at least hit the target. But yes, 1-1 was the full time score. Jeff quite handily placed in 8th at the moment, just 1 point outside the playoff zone and 5 games unbeaten. Whereas Kofu are 13th, they're out of form at the moment, aren't they? 5 draws and a defeat from their last 6 league games. There was a stunning finish to Tokyo Verde's home game against relegation-threatened Iwate, with Iwate trailing 2-0 going into the final 4 minutes. They ended up scoring twice to force a 2-2 draw. Verdi took the lead through an own goal midway through the first half, with Iwate defender Sodai Hasekawa putting the ball past his own keeper from Daiki Fukuzawa's cross. After that, Verdi had plenty of chances to extend their lead. They played pretty well overall, but Iwate goalkeeper Kenta Matsuyama was in great form. He made in particular excellent second half saves from Junki Koike and Taiga Ishiura. At the other end, Iwate hit the post through Tatsuya Tabira, his header from a corner. But then Verdi scored what looked like being the decisive goal in the 70th minute. Hasekawa gave the ball away in the Verdi half while he was trying to build an attack. And on the counter, Mizuki Arai played in Fukuzawa at the top corner of the penalty area, and he finished very well to make it 2-0. After that, Iwate hit the post from a corner again as they tried to get back into the match. I think it was Yusuke Muta, the unlucky header of the ball this time. But the visitors did get a goal back in the 86th minute when Fukuzawa made a mess of clearing the ball, and it was picked up by Iwate sub Atsutaka Nakamura. He released another sub, Masashi Wada, to go into the penalty area and score. Things got even better for Iwate just before full time when the ball dropped to an unmarked Nakamura at the back post, and he absolutely rifled the ball into the roof of the net for 2-2. Fantastic strike. And it finished Tokyo Verdy 2, Iwate 2. Other points to note, this game was the first J2 match where singing and chanting was allowed in certain parts of the stadium. This is part of the J-League's trial for reintroducing singing and chanting more generally very soon. And after the game, another manager was dismissed. Verdi announced the sacking of Takafumi Hori, and a slightly left-field appointment to replace him. It's Hiroshi Jofuku, of course, a manager who is very closely linked to City rivals FC Tokyo from his time in charge there. But Takafumi Hori out and Hiroshi Jofuku in at Tokyo Verdi. And I had a quick chat with Stuart about that as well, coming up in part three. Finally, for round 21 last weekend, in the Kitakanto Derby, it finished Gunma 0, Tochigi 0 at Shoda Stadium in Maebashi. Going into this game, Gunma were on a four-game losing streak, and Tochigi had lost both of their last two games, so perhaps a 0-0 draw wasn't the most surprising outcome. Not too much action to report on. I think Tochigi had the better chances, and Gunma goalkeeper Masatoshi Kushibiki had a good match. He made some really good saves, including late on from a Carlos Gutierrez volley. But not too much goal mouth action. Gunma 0, Tochigi 0 was the full-time score. All right, I think that's all the action from round 21 suitably covered. Please stay tuned, though. In a moment, I'll be back together with Stu. We're going to talk about this raft of managerial changes, and we're going to preview the round 22 games as the second half of the season gets going this weekend. Yeah, please stay tuned. Hi everyone, John Steele here again, still with Stuart Smith there. With all of the round 21 weekend action rounded up then, Stu, we can talk about the fixtures that are coming up this midweek and this weekend. Before that though, we'd better kind of cast our eye over some manager changes from this week. So I've listed these in like order of surprise from least surprising to most surprising for you, Stu. So we better talk about FC Ryukyu. First of all, of course, it was known that they were in the market for a new manager after firing Tetsuhiro Kina. And the man who's coming in, it was rumoured to be a foreigner, and the rumours were correct. It's Nacho Fernandez, a Spanish coach, who's come in. I'll go first, Stu. I know very little or nothing about this guy, apart from his name and what he looks like, sort of looking fairly startled in his team picture there on the club website. But it's not surprising that Ryukyu have made this change. Obviously, they're down at the foot of the table, but what are you thinking?
Pretty much the same as you, really. I don't really know. Don't really know who this guy is.
They call that a hospital pass, don't they?
Yeah. I think that it's about time. The Ryukyu did the right thing by canning Akina, because they were going nowhere but down with him. And then it just depends on the selection criteria, really. Like, it depends on whether you want someone as a firefighter to come in and just make sure you get into 20th place, and that's the be-all and end-all of the season. Can your budget afford that? Can your budget... Do people coming in or do prospective managers that come in demand, look, I want five new players because this bunch of players is rubbish? And then do you have the necessary finances to be able to do that? There's a lot of things that have probably gone into this slightly, I don't want to call it strange, but slightly left field appointment, really, because there's probably a lot of things that we don't know or that we're not privy to with regards to finances, with regards to kind of coaching staff, with regards to kind of the level of support that he's going to get. I mean, you can't fault Ryukyu for trying something new. Spanish coaches in general have been relatively successful in the J League. And is he the kind of person that can come in, change things instantly, and provide a spark to Ryukyu? They do have some good individual players, but they played really poorly as a collective. Some of their defending against Nagasaki was just amateur stuff. It was really, really poor. That's got to be sorted out first. And then, yeah, you take it from there, really. But it is from left field, but I don't kind of begrudge them going that way, because they tried continuity, or they tried something vanilla, and it quite honestly hasn't worked out. And so, yeah, maybe they've course corrected too much, but they were kind of put in this position by the poor choice of Kina before.
It's going to be fascinating to see what happens. I mean, from what I can gather, Nacho Fernandez doesn't have any coaching experience outside Spain, right? So it's not as if he's even been, you know, to other countries in Europe or Asia. Whether that will be a good thing, that he's a completely fresh, you know, sort of pair of eyes, whether it's going to be problematic, we'll wait to see. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think it's a bit of a weird one, because they sacked Kina and then they put like his assistant in sort of temporary charge, right? Or they had like a caretaker for maybe one game, maybe the game of the weekend. So if the deal with Nacho Fernandez was like a done deal, how come he didn't come in straight away? And we'll talk about another couple of teams in a moment where the announcement of the firing of one coach and the hiring of the next was all announced in the same press release. So I just wonder if, like, I would like to know how far in advance this deal was done to bring in Nacho Fernandez, or whether it was just like a kind of, I guess we'll wait, we don't know, we'll wait and see, but what was this kind of a panicky thing, or has there been some long-term kind of strategy involved? But maybe they phoned Yasuhiro Higuchi, but he didn't pick up, or he told them where to stick it. So okay, next in the sort of next cab off the rank, as they say, Stu, Tokyo Verdy, to the delight of our Twitter friend Ruiza, they've finally got rid of Takafumi Hori. He is out, and it's a kind of double whammy. Of all people, Hiroshi Jofuku is in as the new manager, and Tsutomu Ogura is in as a head coach in the head coach position. So I believe this is breaking news for you, Stu. You weren't across this before the pod, so I'm pleased to be breaking it to you. Hiroshi Jofuku has quite a good agent, doesn't he? What do you make of this?
That news just got better and better as it went on. Not only did Hori leave, but Jofuku came in. Jesus. Well,
Mr. FC Tokyo as well, it has to be said.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously familiar with Ajinomoto Stadium. I suppose you can give him.
Yeah, he's not going to get lost.
Not going to get lost on the way.
Not going to get lost in the car park, no.
In as much as that Ryukyu have gone completely left field, like, Tokyo Verdy have just played it relatively safe, you'd think. I don't know, he's all right. I'm struggling to think of a more glamorous adjective, but he's not terrible.
It's pretty unexciting.
Yeah. I think one of the things from watching Verdy, particularly because Verdy had a pretty reasonable start, actually. I think they looked pretty good for the first months, but then they seemed to tail off. And then obviously with what happened at the weekend with Iwate, I think they just lost all sense of kind of like organization. And I think that Jofuku, despite being highly unexciting, at least my guess is that he'll put some kind of organizational structure into the team. And I think he'll insert, like, keep things tight or keep things relatively stable in a defensive setup. Whether he can harness the abilities of the attacking players going forward remains to be seen. It's uninspiring, but at the same time, like, maybe that's just what they needed, just to right the ship, just so that it didn't go any further wrong than it was on the route to being. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of difficult to get excited about Hiroshi Jofuku.
Yeah, that never a truer word spoken. But there's always the wild card of Ogura as a head coach you wonder if maybe these two clubs, Ryukyu and Verdy, did they just pick up the wrong managers at the airport? You know, because like Jofuku would have been sort of the organizer that Ryukyu might need, whereas Verdy, I think, are going to be. I think if they kept Horry, they might have finished as low as 18th, but with Jofuku, they might finish as high as 15th or 12th. Mm. And it's like, well, what's the difference? Yeah. So we'll wait and see. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. But, interesting times, sort of ahead, you have to say. And I think you made the point about expectation, Stu, and I think that brings us nicely onto Nagasaki. I mean, with Ryukyu, you know, obviously the expectation is they wouldn't be relegated this year. So they had to change manager because it looks like they might. Tokyo Verdy, I've got no idea what the goal was for this season. I don't think anybody seriously expect them to have a tilt at the playoffs. So, you know, I think it's, I'm not sure what Jofuku's brief is, you know, for the rest of the season, what the goals are. Nagasaki, fifth in the table, and off the back of that win away at Ryukyu at the weekend, they've fired Hiroshi Matsuda as manager and brought in another name that I'm not familiar with, Fabio Carrier, a Brazilian coach. So, I mean, talking of expectation, firing a manager when you're fifth is a pretty baller. Pretty bold move. I remember Jeff firing at Dwight Lodewijk's when they were third, which was didn't turn out great. So are you surprised that they've fired Matsuda now, Stu, at Nagasaki?
It's like twisting when you're on 18 in pontoon, right? It's kind of, I wonder with this new Brazilian manager coming in, and it's just struck me about Ryukyu's new manager as well. Like, I wonder how long it takes between an agreement and a visa being done. Because I'm looking back at Nagasaki's, because I'm with you. I find it slightly odd that they would fire a manager who has won two and drawn one of their last three games. However, you go back to May 25th and they lost 2-0 at home to Jeff United. And I wonder if at that point they said, "All right, that's you done, but we can't announce anything because we need time to get the work permit or get the visa or get things sorted with regards to the transfer of power or whatever it is." And so that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Second thing that comes to my mind is that there's a large contingent of Brazilian players at Nagasaki, and important Brazilian players at that. They're not peripheral, they are the kind of the pillars of the team. Carlos Cesar, Cristiano, Edgar Jr. I would be amazed if they weren't consulted on this particular issue. Obviously, Carlos Cesar is the captain. Cristiano is, he's hugely important and hugely influential. Edgar Jr. is the team's kind of main goal scoring threat. I wonder if they've done it to appease, not appease because obviously in fifth, but if they've done it to say, look, to take the next step, we know that Hiroshi Matsuda is not the man, but we also recognize that, for example, Jofuku is not the man either. So we're going to go out and we're going to get one of your countrymen, keep it under your hat for a month or so because we can't announce anything yet. But I think that if he can get that Brazilian trio playing at their best, and then at the same time, kind of, if they play at their best, they're probably going to, like a rising tide lift all boats, they're going to make Nagasaki play better as a collective, then it's going to look pretty decent decision, I would assume. However, there's a large chunk of risk on this particular appointment, and the expectation is for them to go up. I don't think we're in any doubt as to what the supporters expect or to what the management of the club expect. And I think that was kind of laid bare in their because I, like you alluded to, like they announced the stepping aside of Matsuda with the appointment of Kurire, but they also, interestingly, on the announcement kind of on their website, they had a message from their chairperson, and they had a message, I think it was from the financial officer or something like that. And it's pretty clear that they expect promotion this year. There's obviously a substantial outlay has gone into their squad this year. And my guess is another substantial outlay on this manager. And so there needs to be rewards for it. Again, I'm not going to kind of batter them for making this decision. I think there are risks associated with it. However, the rewards are there to be had if you can get this unit operating at a higher level than they have been right now. And so, it's risky, but it's a risk reward scenario there. I think there are great rewards on offer if this comes off.
Well, I think this is just my impression looking at it from the outside, but I think Nagasaki is run very much like a business, right? I think like JapanNet is the main sort of backer, and that's like a serious... I know that sounds like a ridiculous comment, like all the clubs are run like businesses, but what I mean is Nagasaki is run like a shrewd business that wants to be successful. So yeah, they don't take these decisions lightly, I don't think. I think there will a lot of thought will have gone into this one. The coach Carrier has a lot of experience as number one in Brazil compared to Nacho Fernandez in Spain, for example. But I don't think he has any experience outside Brazil. So again, I think that's the risk element that you were alluding to just now. And you mentioned the kind of Brazilian contingent at Nagasaki. Could we kind of throw that net a bit wider and bring in Victor Ibarbo? Obviously he's Colombian, would that perhaps galvanize him? I did see. I think I just caught a little bit of the game at the weekend, and I saw him sort of like when he should have been holding on to the ball in the last minute, just kind of trying to take someone on in his own half and lose it, give away a throw. And I was like, we need more of that. You know, we need more minutes for Victor Ibarbo is what we want. But yeah, it's interesting. But I think, everything you said is totally right. They've probably been planning this from a month at least, maybe longer, and it's taken time to get all the ducks in a row with, paperwork and visas and things. But I think... if you fire a manager and replace him when you're fifth, and then you end up finishing lower than fifth in the table, which could happen, then it's a gamble that's not paid off, right? Whereas I think Nacho Fernandez has kind of got the easier, in inverted commas, job, because as long as he gets Ryukyu to third bottom, it's high fives, isn't it? He's done the job he's brought in to do. I mean, Jofuku at Verdi, I think they've won one in the last 13. As long as he wins like two of the next 13, it's an improvement.
He'll be all right, yeah.
Whereas Fabio Correa is coming in at Nagasaki, where you say they've drawn, was it 1-2 and drawn one of the last three, and they're fifth, and then they're not that far off the automatic promotion places. So I am not sure. He's possibly the best equipped of these three managers to deal with that situation. It's also a bit of he's the one who's going to be judged the most harshly, I think. If it doesn't work out. But we'll see. And I think the impression I get from Daniel and other Nagasaki fans is they didn't really take to Matsuda, because similar to what you said about Matsuda earlier, he's not really got the right formula for their kind of attacking play, the front sort of front six. And I think it's annoyed a few people to see players like Ryo Makida and Takumi Nagarino doing well at Sendai, for example. Table, obviously, there and Kamen Togashi, all ex-Nagasaki people, sort of having it off, as Tony Pulis would say, at Sendai. So we'll see if Kurie can perhaps get the formula right in the attacking third. They've certainly got the players to do that, in the form of the likes of Edgar Junior and Cristiano, like you said. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it's like you said, high risk, high reward. And we complain when the teams make boring appointments, don't we? Quite rightly. So I think we should be open minded and we should be positive about Nacho Fernandez and Fabio Correa and probably Mr. Jofuku as well, to be fair. Stuart, at this point, I'll move you on if that's okay. We better talk about the games that people need to keep an eye on this week and this weekend. Speaking of midweek, it's thankfully, from my point of view, another quiet midweek on the J2 and J3 front. Just one midweek match on Wednesday, June the 15th, and it's the rearranged game from round 16. So second bottom, Iwate hosting Yamagata, and the kickoff time for that one's at 6 p.m, so quite a fan hostile, as you'd expect. I think by the time people listen to this pod, that game will already have been played, Stu, so you're spared giving me a comment, I think. But yes, Iwate against Yamagata on Wednesday night. Let's move on. Let's talk about round 22 coming up, with most of the games are on Saturday, June the 18th, and summer's coming, so that means most of the games will be sort of evening kickoffs. There is one dirtier holdout at 2 p.m. It's Jeff Chiba against Omiya. Goodness me, I don't know which, you know, two teams that sort of go out of their way to embarrass themselves. How will they go on against each other? And then, yeah, the bulk of the match is at 6 p.m, and it's sort of not quite game of the season contender, but it's a big one. Sendai hosting Yokohama FC, that's second against third at 6 p.m. And at the same time, Iwate host Tokushima. It's Tochigi against Oita. Tokyo Verdy, with new manager, I guess, will be hosting Yamaguchi. And it's Kumamoto against Mito. Then at 7 p.m, three more matches. Yamagata, who are sixth at the moment, but that might have changed after the Wednesday night game, they're hosting mid-table Kofu. Okayama, who we mentioned are going well, they're hosting the bottom side, but under new management, FC Ryukyu. And Nagasaki, going well in fifth, but also under new management, they're hosting Gunma. And then before I get your thoughts, Stu, I'll go to the Sunday games, just a pair of games on Sunday, June the 19th at 2 p.m. Leaders Niigata, or leaders at the moment anyway, they're hosting 15th place Akita. And then to round off the weekend at 6 p.m, it's Machida hosting Kanazawa at Nozuta. I've run through the fixtures like a madman there, Stu, but which is there a game or two that you think the listeners should be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think you're right in saying that Sendai and Yokohama FC is the biggest game. I think that, to be honest, I think that game sucks the oxygen away from most of the other games, because there aren't any other kind of, you know, super blockbuster appealing games outside of the game at the Eurotech. However, I am interested to see how the new managers get on. I think Nacho Fernandez has got a really difficult opening game away at Okayama. Fabio Carrire should have a fairly simple outing at home to Gunma, but you're never, obviously, you're never quite sure how much input he's had in this week. And yeah, aside from that, there aren't, I mean, once upon a time, Yamagata and Kofu would have been a playoff kind of influencing game, but Kofu are having a down year this year. Kumamoto and Mito will be a good game to watch for the neutrals, I would say. I doubt that'll end 0-0. But yeah, I think all eyes on the Eurotech, because Sendai versus Yokohama FC will be the most important game, I think.
Yeah, that all stands to reason. I wonder, somehow my eyes are drawn to Tochi against Oita, where I feel like we are due a kind of five-goal thriller involving Tochigi. And I just wonder if Oita, like, I've got a feeling this is going to be 3-2 one way or the other, but I don't know why. There's no real rhyme or reason for that, other than Oita's Brazilian forward Samuel is starting to score goals. And I wonder if that could pose Tochigi some problems. But yeah, it's late, so perhaps just hallucinating. But yeah, I've got a feeling. I see goals at the Kanseki. I think it's at Kanseki. I see goals in that Tochigi Oita game. That's the point I'm driving at. I also think, you know, with James and yeah, we should say well done to Victor for his debut on the pod last weekend. Machida Kanazawa, yes. You know, Machida Kanazawa, that has the potential to be interesting, because Kanazawa obviously generally a really, really good away side, but they did take their eye off the ball a few times in that 5-1 defeat against Okayama, didn't they, a couple of rounds ago. So they'll obviously be hoping to keep things a bit tighter. And at Machida, as we mentioned earlier, they need to score more goals. So I think that could be an interesting clash of a team. I think both of those teams like to play on the counter, to be honest. And I think that could make it an interesting tactical battle. But yeah, lots to look forward to. But Stu, I concur. I think Sendai Yokohama is the blockbuster, as you said. And yeah, I think we should have one eye on the new managers At Ryukyu, Ryukyu against Okayama, and at Nagasaki against Guma, and Mr. Jofuku hosting Yamaguchi, hosting Yamaguchi, possibly a quarter of an eye on that game. If that I think that we don't have enough eyes to keep one eye on everything, do we? But you know what I mean. All right, Stu, thanks as ever for coming on and giving us the benefit of your expertise. It's been too long, so don't be a stranger. Okay, yeah, come through any time and help me out with this this monstrous J2 schedule again this year, and hopefully we can talk again soon. And we didn't mention Gifu once. There you go. That's a sign of the times, perhaps.
You just ruined it.
Yeah, I know. I can edit that out. Don't worry.
Okay. There you go.
Thanks as always for listening to the J-Talk Extra Time podcast and the Big Pod as well. And we appreciate your support. If it's the free Patreon downloads, or especially if you're a supporter of the J-Talk Pod on Patreon, thanks as always for giving us your backing, your votes of confidence, as it were. And hope you enjoy the football this weekend. Yeah, please stay tuned. Magic Mike Innes is going to be along in a moment. As always, he's got all the J3 news in a J-Talk Short Corner. That's all from Stu and me. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the Round 12 matches played over last weekend, as well as previewing all the J3 games coming up over the next few days. First, an item of J3 news since the last pod. Vanrare Hachinohe have become the fourth J3 club this season to make a change of coach. With the team struggling near the foot of the table, Masahiro Kuzuno stepped down following Sunday's game against Gainare Tottori, of which more later. Kuzuno has been involved at Hachinohe since 2018, acting variously as coach and assistant, this spell in charge having started at the beginning of 2021. The club made some eye-catching forays into the transfer market over the winter and, on paper, have a much improved squad, but results this year have not gone Kuzuno's way, and he departs with a record of 2 wins and only 6 goals scored in the opening 11 matches. Vanrare have already announced their new coach as Ryo Shigaki, a 42-year-old with an interesting career history. He spent only 2 seasons as a registered player in English non-league with Solihull Borough and Racing Club Warwick, 2 clubs whose names I never expected to mention on this pod. Shigaki then spent 5 years coaching in England before moving back to Japan in 2006 when he got a job as a translator at Nagoya Grampus. Since then, Shigaki has moved into coaching, being on the staff at multiple clubs around the J-League, including in J3 with Tottori. His most recent role was in Thailand with BG Pathum United. Vanrare will be Shigeki's first time in charge of a senior men's team. Now on to the Round 12 action, and there was one game on Saturday the 11th of June, pitching 3rd against 4th Matsumoto Yamaga against Fujieda My FC. Matsumoto was still without top scorer Ayumu Yokoyama on international duty with the Japan under-19 squad, and coach Hiroshi Nanami switched to a 3-at-the-back system to deal with a Fujieda attack that had scored 15 in its previous 4 league outings. My FC indeed looked the more dangerous side early on, but Yamaga took the lead just after the half hour, Ren Komatsu's shot striking the hand of the luckless Keisuke Ogasawara for a penalty kick. Komatsu took it, his shot was saved by Kei Uchiyama, but he tucked in the rebound. The start of the second half was delayed by stormy weather conditions around the Sun Pro Alwyn Stadium, but when play did eventually get underway, Matsumoto quickly made it 2-0, a brilliant flick by Yusuke Kikui, setting up Ryo Toyama, who surged past Tojiro Kubo to flick it into the middle for Komatsu to head home. Captain Takayuki Mae almost got a 3rd, left unmarked for a far post volley after some clever wing play by Paolo Junichi Tanaka, but Uchiyama saved well. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Fujieda 0. A tactical triumph by Nanami, whose side ceded possession but were able to keep their opponents at arm's length. My FC, always likely to give away chances, and their unbeaten run comes to an end. Then on Sunday the 12th, 7,827 people were there to see leaders Kagoshima United at ever unpredictable FC Gifu, for whom Yuji Yokoyama made four changes to the side that could only draw with Hachinohe last time out. Naoto Otake's Kagoshima didn't look their best early on. First, keeper Fuma Shirasaka racing over to the touchline in a moment of madness that ended in Daisuke Ishizu hitting a shot into the side netting, and then Shosei Okamoto's loose pass enabling Ishizu to strike a 30-yarder that Shirasaka had to tip round the post. The game stayed 0-0 until the hour mark, when Yosuke Kashiwagi chipped it into the danger area. Ishizu got the better of Kenta Hirose and set up Yoshihiro Shoji to score his first of the season. The visitors had a chance to draw level only 4 minutes later, Koki Arita beating the offside trap and laying it off for Kota Hoshi, recalled to the side in place of the impressive Eisuke Watanabe, but Hoshi couldn't convert into an open goal. The Smoking Volcanoes were, however, coming more into the match, and with 20 minutes left, they equalised via the unlikely figure of left-back Atsushi Satsukawa, whose overlapping run took him into the box to meet a return flick by Rei Yonezawa. Satsukawa's low shot deflected off Shoji to loop over Takuya Matsumoto and in. But it was Gifu who claimed the points in the 83rd minute. Ryo Kubota's high cross to the far post, evading Hoshi to reach Tomoya Ugajin, whose first time shot sneaked into the corner. Final score, Gifu 2, Kagoshima 1. A big crowd, a big result, and a big response from Yokoyama's team. Kagoshima made to pay for an under-par performance. And that defeat for the leaders set up the chance for second-placed Iwaki FC in their game at Kamatamari Sanuki, for whom Toshihiro Nishimura awarded a pro debut for 18-year-old defender Keisuke Tao, a daunting challenge against the most potent attack in the division. But it was Sanuki who got themselves in front in the 33rd minute, Kanta Usui's whipped cross appearing to be heading for main striker Kohei Matsumoto, only for Ikki Kawasaki to steal in with a near-post header and guide it past Shuhei Shikano. The Noodle Boys kept their lead until half-time, thanks to keeper Takuya Takahashi, who dived acrobatically to keep out Rei Ieizumi's header from a Rikusaga free kick. Less than 3 minutes after the restart, though, another set play had Iwaki level. All eyes were on Saga to take it, but instead, 30 yards out, it was Masaru Hidaka who struck the ball round the wall and inside the post. A memorable first J-League goal for the left back. Kamatamari did have half chances to retake the lead, notably through Takuma Goto, but he couldn't keep his shot on target when in space on the edge of the area. And sure enough, in injury time, Iwaki found the net again. Saga sending in a cross after a short corner. Kotaro Arima getting ahead of Naoya Matsumoto to glance a near post header over Takahashi and in. Final score, Sanuki 1, Iwaki 2. Heartbreak for Kamatamare, but they don't have it in them to manage out these kinds of games. Four in consecutive matches for Arima and his team go top. Another side heading in the right direction are Katane Toyama, who moved into closer contention thanks to a narrow win at Tegevajaro Miyazaki. Another story of what might have been for Miyazaki, who played some lovely football but somehow failed to score, coming closest in the 13th minute when Yudai Tokunaga's shot was headed off the line by Naoto Ando, and then chasing the match with 18 minutes left, Kenta Okuma's cross reached Yuta Shimozawa, whose shot was well saved by the assured Genki Yamada. The game's decisive moment came 10 minutes into the second half. Arthur Silva's headed layoff in midfield reaching Ando, who chested it down, raced to the edge of the area and fired in an angled shot that beat Shunsuke Ueda at the far post. Final score, Miyazaki 0, Toyama 1. Yasushi Takasaki and Tege Vajaro falling to their first defeat in 8. Katane, clinical in front of goal, now only 4 points off the promotion places. Dropping down the table now, though, are Fukushima United, who drew at struggling Giravance Kitakyushu. Fukushima went ahead in the 14th minute, Kosuke Tanaka passing the ball down the right flank for Yuta Nobe, who beat Takuya Nagata to centre it for Shoki Nagano to poach a finish that curled away from Yuya Tanaka and inside the far post. Nobe put in a good shift for the visitors, twice going close to a second goal with low drives that went just wide. But Giravance equalised on 57 minutes when their wide midfielder Ryo Sato got in front of Tanaka to power in a header from a Takeaki Harigaya corner kick. Final score, Kitakyushu 1, Fukushima 1. Giravance bring to an end their losing streak, but they still haven't won since round 4. Fukushima's early season mojo seems to have disappeared. A team that may be relocating their mojo after a change of coach are SC Sagamihara, who at FC Imabari picked up a second consecutive win under Norihiro Satsukawa. Key to Sagamihara's newfound success is forward Takumi Kato, signed on loan from Shimizu S-Pulse at the end of last month. Impressive on his round 11 debut, but against Imabari, scorer of 2 goals that set Sagamihara on the road to victory. They had to come from behind though, and it was Imabari's own new loanee from Shimizu, Kanta Chiba, who broke the deadlock in the 8th minute, getting on the end of Kazuki Nakagawa's knockdown of a beautiful long ball from Keisei Kusumi and shooting past Kentaro Kakoi from 15 yards. The lead lasted only 9 minutes before Kato stepped on to centre stage, completely unmarked to head home Jungo Fujimoto's corner, and Kato got his second in the 37th minute, receiving a through pass from Tsubasa Ando, finding space between Takuro Uehara and Wataru Shimoguchi and confidently dispatching the shot. The points were made safe midway through the second half when Kazuaki Sato got in front of Kohei Tomita to guide Ryu Kawakami's cross into the net. Final score, Imabari 1, Sagamihara 3. An anonymous display from the home side, clearly unprepared to deal with the physical challenge presented by Kato. Sagamihara look fired up and are heading back up towards mid-table. That's where you'll find AC Nagano, Paseiro and Ehime FC after their draw in the Orange Derby at the Nagano U Stadium. A match packed with incident and one Nagano coach, Yuki Stauff, will find hard to believe his team didn't win. They did take the lead in the 21st minute when a low cross by Yuki Morikawa was deflected in by Naoki Kuriyama's diving header for a spectacular own goal. Early in the second half, Paseiro twice came close to doubling the lead. First when Masaki Miyasaka met another Miyakawa cross with a first-time shot, only for Reiya Morishita to clear it off the line. Then when Takuma Mizutani hustled Kyoji Kutsune into a mistake and set up Takuya Miyamoto, who blasted a close-range shot straight at keeper Kenta Tokushige. And Nagano were punished 3 minutes from time when, following a half-cleared Ehime corner, a hopeful punt back into the box reached Kuriyama, who forced the save from Issei Ouchi, the ball then falling for Morishita to poke it home from close range. Then, in injury time, first, the visitors almost won it. Daisei Suzuki setting up Takumi Sasaki for a 20-yard shot that beat Ouchi and hit the post. And then, from the resulting counter-attack, Nagano's Reyo Yamanaka got himself on the end of a long ball, raced through on goal, but was adjudged to have fouled Takashi Kondo before sliding it past Tokushige. Stealth protested vigorously to the fourth official, but the game ended Nagano 1, Ehime 1. 5 games without a win now for Paseiro, for whom this season is starting to look, well, exactly like last season. Ehime will be pleased with the away draw in the middle of a tough month of fixtures. Now on to what turned out to be Masahiro Kuzuno's last game as coach of Vanrare Hachinohe at home to Gainare Tottori. The teams came into the fixture with only 3 wins between them all season, but Gainare got their noses in front in first half stoppage time. Koki Ishii's long through pass dissecting Vanrare defenders Kodai Fuji and Daichi Kobayashi, neither of whom rushed to track back, leaving Daichi Ishikawa to stab the ball past Kazugi Hattori. Just after the restart, Tottori went 2 up, although for a period it felt like the home goal was leading a charmed life. Hattori produced a good save to keep out Naoya Uozato's right-footed shot from the edge of the box. Ryuji Sawakami hit the bar with the follow-up, and Yu Okubo's header was deflected back onto the bar by Fuji. The ball was then half-cleared, but Tottori regrouped. Taiki Arai hit the byline and pulled it back for Okubo to finish from 10 yards. Vanrare tried to get back into the game, but Yusei Kayanuma's shot was pushed over the bar by Koshiro Itohara, and Kazuya Niwa didn't have the composure to finish at the far post from Masashi Kokubun's high ball. And with 8 minutes left, Tottori sealed the win and the fate of Masahiro Kuzuno. Yuya Taguchi getting on the end of a long ball but being flattened by Fuji for a penalty. Taguchi's kick was saved, but he was quickest to the rebound and hit it into the roof of the net. Final score, Hachinohe 0, Tottori 3. Vanrare making it plain what a weak team they've become this season. Gainare able to make good on the attacking promise they've sometimes displayed. Finally, Ezel Claro Numazu picked up a first win in 4 at home to YSCC Yokohama. 2 goals in 3 minutes at the end of the first half proved decisive. Kotaro Tokunaga heading back a long ball to set up Naoki Sato, who sold Ryotaro Yamamoto a delicious dummy before finishing from 15 yards to put Ezel Claro 1-0 up. Then Tokunaga finding in space Takumi Hama, whose low shot somehow squirmed between the fingers of Ryo Ishii for 2-0. It was almost 3 in the 52nd minute, a superb Tokunaga pass sending Tatsuya Anzai sprinting down the right and crossing for Kenshiro Suzuki, whose first-time shot beat Ishii but hit the post. YSCC should have pulled a goal back with 18 minutes left. Tomoya Hayashi skying a free shot after being set up by the lively Shuntaro Kawabe, but the division's bottom team did get on the score sheet in the 81st minute. Ryohei Wakizeka's mazy run eventually brought to an end via a shove in the penalty area by Terukazu Shinozaki. Hayashi scored from the spot, his 3rd in 5 games. And the match closed out with a squabble in the centre circle that followed a foul on Anzai by YSCC's Yutaro Yanagi. Sato rushed up and pushed Yanagi to the ground, meaning that the scorer of the first Numazu goal ended the afternoon being given a straight red card. Final score, Numazu 2, YSCC 1. Ezel Claro possessed of the quality to overcome this opponent, YSCC. Not good enough in front of goal, not resilient enough in defence. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 12, noting that Hachinohe and Sagamihara still have 1 game in hand. The top 4 teams are Iwaki with 27 points, Kagoshima slipped to second with 26, then it's Matsumoto 25, and moving into fourth for the first time all season, Toyama with 22. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are Kitakyushu in 15th with 10 points. Then it's Tottori with 8, Hachinohe with 7, and still at the bottom with 5, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the fixtures in the next few days. You may already know the result of this one, but on Wednesday the 15th of June, there's the rearranged Round 8 game, a vital one for both sides. It's Hachinohe against Sagamihara. Then over the weekend, the season moves on to Round 13 with 4 games on Saturday the 18th. How will Kagoshima respond to their defeat at Gifu? They're at home to YSCC. Third-placed Matsumoto make the trip to fellow relegated side Ehime. Fading Fukushima are at home to galvanised Gifu. And Norihiro Satsukawa's Sagamihara host Sanuki. Then on Sunday the 19th, leaders Iwaki have the chance to pick up 3 more points at home to Kitakyushu. Can Toyama put more pressure on the top 3? They host Numazu. Ryo Shigaki takes charge of Hachinohe for the first time at Nagano. Can Fujieda get back to winning ways at home to Imabari? And finally, Tottori welcome Miyazaki. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.